This week on the According to Sources podcast, shares of Campbell's Soup dropped nearly 10% this week following disappointing earnings from Conagra. But what does it mean for the stock and their ongoing strategic review? We could get a conclusion to Athena Health as soon as tomorrow. I'll give my final thoughts. And what limited M&A activity this week we got was in the restaurant space. Will Papa John's be the next to go private? I'm Mike Samuels, founder and portfolio manager of Broome Street Capital, and this is According to Sources for the week of September 30th, 2018.
It's crossing the tape right now. Let me explain what's happening here.
Some breaking news to share with you this morning, M&A related.
There's good activism.
I think eBay is in that situation. They got a jewel in PayPal.
There's bad activism.
Unfortunately, JCPenney was a dying company.
Examples of activism gone awry.
It was not a surprise to me that that deal fell through.
This is such a game changer.
Hello and welcome to According to Sources, a podcast that devotes its time to the subject of M&A, activism, and the sources that cover and surround them. First, a little bit of house cleaning before we get rolling. A brief disclaimer. Again, this is not investment advice. This is simply the opinion of myself and Broome Street Capital. Second, this is a weekly podcast, but my views often change during the week as information gets dispersed and disseminated across various media, and I tweet in real time. The handle on that is at Accord to Sources. That's A-C-C-O-R-D-T-O Sources. And lastly, if you want to reach me directly, you can always email me, and that is michael@accordingtosourcespodcast.com. I do try to reply to as many as I can. Today, I want to just briefly spend some time on Campbell's Soup, Athena, and Papa John's. And then the rest of the podcast, I'm going to try to spend some time reviewing my biggest mistakes I've made in my career and lately, and what I'm trying to take away from them. But first, I want to just briefly touch on Tesla, because it seems like that's what all the media and the market has been talking about lately. Not surprisingly, Elon Musk settled his charges with the SEC over the weekend to essentially everything that was offered to him originally. $20 million fine, a three-year probation from the chairman role, two independent directors. We heard about all this on Friday. Now the question is, where does the stock trade on Monday? Now this is tough. On one hand, I look at it from perspective A. If the news from Friday had never come out, and all we got last week instead was the headline, Elon Musk settles with the SEC, the stock, which had closed at 307 on Thursday, most likely would have gone up 5 to 10% Friday. Is that fair? I mean, it's a fairly big overhang removed, and it's definitely something that the shorts were pinning their hopes on, the idea of a full-scale investigation, maybe Musk could leave. So I don't think it's unreasonable for the stock to think that the stock could trade 320 to 330 on news like that. However, from perspective B, Friday's news was yet another example, another log on the fire, another red flag that he, Elon Musk, is just completely uninvestable. And since he is Tesla, Tesla is frankly uninvestable. Citi downgraded the shares Friday, and I'm assuming some institutions sold on that. And if you're Fidelity or you're T. Rowe Price and you sold stock Friday, do you really want to buy it back Monday because now he's settling this lawsuit? I mean, is this really an overhang remove for this company? So my gut is telling me that Tesla probably opens at around, let's say, 290 or 285 Monday, and then most likely has trouble holding those gains. But again, at the end of the day, this stock is the least rational of any that I know. And as I think it was Jim Cramer said on Friday, this is either going to 1,000 or it's going to zero. There really is no middle ground here. But okay, on to Campbell's Soup. So the food space right now is just a disaster. I mean, if it wasn't that long ago that the very mention of Kraft buying someone would have sent that stock up 10%. I'm talking about the buyer going up 10%. And now here we are a few years later, and that stock's been cut in half. I was looking at Mondelez. That hasn't moved in 3 years. Conagra, who just bought Pinnacle, reported this week, and the street was really disappointed. That stock sold off 10%. And that all reverberated into the shares of Campbell's, ticker CPB, which also traded down 10% on its own. And now, we all know Dan Loeb's Third Point owns 5% of this company, and we know that he's allied with one of the grandchildren of John Dorrance, that grandchild owns about 2.7% of the company. We know that he wants to replace the entire board of directors with his own slate. And finally, we know that he's not satisfied with Campbell's plan to sell just two units off, but rather he wants an outright sale of the entire company. The question is, what does Loeb do if he can't replace the full board at the annual meeting, which will most likely occur in the middle of November? Last year, it was on November 15th. Now, if history is a guide, Loeb has rarely backed down from a fight. The only one I can think of is when he sold his shares of Sony when they didn't spin off the entertainment division. But think about Yahoo and Sotheby's. I was actually recently rereading a Vanity Fair article that highlighted some of Dan Loeb's, they call them, most scathing letters to management. And my favorite one was actually to the executive of Potlatch, and this was in 2003. I just wanted to read it for you. I thought it was interesting. Quote, this is the letter to the executives. Since you ascended to your current role as chief value destroyer, and he called it CVD in the letter, when you assumed the formal title of CEO in 1999, the shares have dropped over 45%, a destruction of shareholder value in excess of $520 million. This negative sum does not include the decline in the company's pension plan over the past 2 years, which has gone from a surplus of $156 million at December 31st, 2000, to a surplus of $88 million at December 31st, 2001, to its current underfunded status of $54 million. Your sorry excuse that, quote, everyone else does it, end quote, is reminiscent of a teenager who uses peer pressure as a pretext to explain his drug problem. I only wish that I could recommend a recovery program for you and Potlatch CFO Gerald Zuckel for your apparent addiction that could be called Value Destroyers Anonymous, end quote. And that's the end of the letter. I just thought that was a great piece of writing. I also believe that if you're Loeb and frankly a shareholder of Campbell's, in a way you want the stock to be sitting near 52-week lows when the annual meeting occurs. The worst things get, the worse that they continue to miss earnings, I would think the more likely a change would occur. The stock now becomes extremely binary into this event. And what I've begun to do is sell puts for October. And I'm currently short the October 26 expiry $36 strike puts, which are trading about a dollar. And I like these because I believe the stock has to have some sort of a floor around here in order to capture the optionality of Loeb winning the board seats in November. And the company isn't set to report until November 20th, so barring a mid-quarter update, selling these October 36s feels pretty safe to me. Now, the bigger and broader question is, where does the stock go on a third-point win of all 12 board seats? Well, Citigroup, for example, did a deal analysis on Kraft buying Campbell's. And they wrote that if Kraft even paid as high as $48, it would be over 18% accretive to Kraft's earnings. On the flip side, if Loeb loses and the board remains intact and its status quo for Campbell's, I think it is reasonable for the shares to trade around $30 to $32. The second topic I want to discuss today is Athena Health. And again, the ticker on this is ATHN. This is a stock I brought up 2 weeks ago. I had taken a small position at 144.20. And we're finally going to get a conclusion to this very strange sort of activist campaign and strategic review that was all initiated by Elliott Advisors and, of course, included the embarrassing removal of founder and CEO Jonathan Bush following some fairly negative press reports. We could know as soon as tomorrow, Monday, what happens. The New York Post revealed that Enthrive, which is owned by the PE firm Pamploma, was the late strategic entry that joined the bidding process, and the trade clearly has been wrong on my part. However you feel about Athena as a company, the takeaway for me from this entire thing is that Elliott has done some major damage to the brand that they've built up over these past 5 or 6 years. And I say that with a caveat. They're still going to make money if the company sells at $135. I believe their average is in the low 100s. To them, this was a successful campaign. But to me, I think, well, what about the next one? What about the next CEO they write a letter to and try to remove? What about the next letter that has a bid price on it? If Elliott lets someone else buy this company for $135 after sending a letter saying they're going to bid 160, it shows what many feared was true all along, that they never actually wanted to buy this company, that the bid was perhaps fake, merely a ploy to get an auction going. It's just something to keep in mind the next time Elliott does go activist and they do something like this. And lastly, while it was a very quiet week for M&A news, what there was all centered around the restaurant industry. And we saw Sonic, S-O-N-C, was bought up by Roark, who of course had previously bought Buffalo Wild Wings. Bojangles, the ticker on that is B-O-J-A. Reuters is reporting that they're going to be exploring a sale, and that sent shares up 12%. And lastly, Papa John's. Reuters also out Wednesday saying that they've reached out to suitors and they've asked them for a submitted offer. Jefferies put out an interesting piece of research saying that the Sonic transaction should create the most reasonable comp for buyers to value Papa John's. And they said that based on Sonic's buyout multiple, pizza could fetch $63.50 a share. And they think the most logical buyer is private equity, although they didn't mention that Wendy's had shown earlier interest. And remember, the Wall Street Journal, before the John Schnatter sort of scandal broke out, Wendy's had apparently approached Papa John's. So I wouldn't be surprised if they resurfaced. And then the wrinkle here to me is that Schnatter continues to be kind of a pest in this whole process. And he doesn't really seem to want to go away. And at the end of the day, remember, he owns 30% of this company. And he'll have significant sway over if and how this gets sold. Three months ago, I interviewed author Michael Batnick after reading his great book, Big Mistakes, which chronicles the biggest investor errors from the greatest investors throughout history. And it talks about Warren Buffett, Stanley Druckenmiller, Michael Steinhardt, to name a few. It's a great read, and it had me thinking about what have been some of my own biggest mistakes. And I realized that these aren't merely mistakes where they're sort of a one-off event, rather bad habits that I've repeated over and over again. I just wanted to talk about some of these trades and some of these habits as they relate to M&A and event-driven trading. And I've pinpointed five of them. The first bad habit is losing discipline after a win. Now, 2 weeks ago, I had one of my better trades of the year when IDTI was bought out by Renesas, something I talked about on this show. And if I was staying disciplined, the next move after an event simply is just to wait. A good trade will present itself. It always does. But the hardest thing for me sometimes is doing nothing, sitting on my hands, waiting. There's a little voice that just says, okay, on to the next one, especially after a win where I've built some cushion up. But sometimes there just isn't a next one, at least not yet. And I believe that while I stayed small, Athena Health was perhaps never truly a high conviction trade idea, and perhaps because of that, I should have stayed away. I think in a way, I created a bull story. In this case, that Elliott would do brand harm by not following through on its bid and decided Athena was worth owning. And by the way, I think large hedge funds do this all the time. And maybe the most famous example was Bill Ackman and Allergan. He made a huge score and then piled all of those profits from it into Valeant. It was easy and obvious to put $4 billion into Allergan when you knew you had a bid at your back. But there couldn't have been the equal level of conviction in the Valeant trade. The second rule I broke in the Athena trade is don't bet against a smart investor. Now, joke all you want about Greenlight Capital and their performance over these past few years. Of course, it's been terrible. Some of the worst we've ever seen. But at the end of the day, while they've made some bad bets, they're not idiots. And they've done thorough work on Athena. And for that reason was yet another reason to avoid getting long the stock. Mistake three, the next rule I broke after the IDTI win, was what I'll call veering out of my lane. And what I mean by that is not trading events in M&A, what I've proven to myself I can make money doing, and instead getting involved in things I don't know a lot about. And I did this when I shorted some of these cannabis names 2 weeks ago while they were going crazy, specifically Tilray. Now again, I stayed small. But when a stock gaps up 70 points overnight, even a small position can hurt pretty badly. And while I'm learning now, my knowledge of the cannabis sector is still fairly limited. It's essentially what Andrew Left and Citron are telling me, and I should have just stayed away. It's easy to get tempted to trade something out of my wheelhouse when nothing else is going on or appears to be going on. Again, this is about patience or lack thereof. I always need to remember, when you get good at one small niche of investing, in this case, M&A, activism, that sort of thing, and you spend all your time in it and think you have a small edge over the next guy, the second I wade into sort of uncharted water, so to speak, I'm venturing into an area that someone else has an edge over me and something that they've been spending lots of time doing. And there's a danger to that. So that was mistake number three, or bad habit number three. Bad habit number four is only listening to information that agrees with my point of view. And again, I'm going to use the Athena Health example here. The New York Post and Deal Reporter came out with fairly negative stories about how the Athena process was essentially going on. And even David Faber's CNBC story, which claimed that a strategic was entering the fray, was in a way negative. Any strategic review that's been going along well and has a decent set of bidders, no banker would allow someone to enter the fray with a week to go in the bidding. It just wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen unless the process was going badly. But instead, I chose to really just side with the positive slant of the news and ignore what was really happening, and it caused a losing trade in Athena. And number five, and the last big mistake I want to talk about today, is just simply the idea of making up a bull thesis. And while I did this in Athena Health, saying Elliott was essentially pigeonholed into paying $160 for this company, that was a theory I made up. And nothing illustrates this idea of making up a bull thesis than my investing experience during the NXPI Qualcomm takeover, when I convinced myself that tracking the whereabouts of the Qualcomm jet would signify the end of an 18-month MOFCON review in China. That if a plane took off for Beijing, clearly that was a sign that the deal would get approved, that they wouldn't be allowed over there or go over there if it wasn't worth their while. And suddenly I'm in my office listening to air traffic control from an airport in Carlsbad, California, while I'm on the phone with a woman who's staking out the airport from the parking lot with a set of binoculars, looking at tail numbers. Now, clearly, that thesis didn't play out well, and it doesn't look like the Athena will either. I guess the takeaways from all this is that, at least for me, stick to what I know. Be patient, and most importantly, trade off the information that's in front of me, not the theories that are going on in my head. That's going to be it for According to Sources for the week of September 30th. Again, as a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter. The handle is @AccordToSources. If you're liking the content, please feel free to leave a positive review. It'll help me to continue to get great guests on the show. Again, I'm Mike Samuels of Broom Street Capital, and I'll see you next week.